And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Pete M. from San Diego.
Well, my name's Pete Morrison, and I have alcoholism. That's for sure, man. I'm convinced. Took me a long time to get convinced. Speaking of convincing, let's give Andrea another hand here. She did a hell of a job. Huh? Well, my little story goes like this. It's very, very simple. I drank until I couldn't drink anymore, and then I just kind of kept drinking. And one night out there in that little kitchen on the far side of El Cajon, I hit the wall. It just kind of all came together in perfect sequence, you know, with perfect timing. She was making noise of leaving. My boss had no more sense of humor. My kids hadn't talked to me in a couple of months. And then she said that she was done, right? And there was probably a lot more going on there, but it all just kind of pinpointed right there in that little kitchen there on that night, and I kind of got it, you know. I got this sparkling little idea that there was something connected, there was some kind of connection between all that stuff that was going on in my life and all that pain, and somehow maybe I drank a little funny. And that's as close as I could get. That's as good as I could get to just kind of being honest with myself, you know? And I was in a goodly amount of desperation. The pain was overwhelming, and somebody in that little kitchen there that one night said, "God help me," I think out loud. And I was the only one there. And it got really weird after that. You know, I went and I picked up the phone and I asked the operator, the information operator, for the telephone number for central office. And then I actually called central office. Now, I'm the kind of guy that would get the number and promptly lose it. I would put it somewhere special where I wouldn't lose it. You know what I mean? And, but then I called central office and I asked them where a meeting was. And then maybe three later, I actually went down to that little meeting in that little clubhouse in El Cajon. And, man, I was scared to death, scared to death. And with lightning speed perception, don't you know, I figured out which was the front of the room and which was the back of the room, and I headed right for the last row and sat there and really focused on the tops of my shoes for the whole meeting. And in spite of the fact that I really didn't want to hear what was going on there, I just went down there to find. I knew you guys had something somehow. And I just wanted to figure out how to drink like a regular guy, you know? I mean, I was holding out for, in spite of all the pain, the denial is a funny thing, you know? It comes up, it grabs me by the throat, and something happens, you know? Like, I'll have another beer or something. and it just goes away. And I'm fine, thank you, fine. I don't know what I was thinking of. It was a weird thing. And I'm off on another 5-year run, you know. But somehow that night, and I think it was a Friday night, I got to that meeting. And in spite of myself, I heard exactly what I needed to hear, you know. And I didn't have... I didn't have a lot of trust, and they were telling my story, and I knew those guys had been following me around somehow, and taking notes, you know. But I finally got it that they were telling their own story, and their story and my story matched up, and I caught enough alcoholism that night to go back the next night, you know, still without having a drink. I had felt so bad and so guilty and so, I don't know what the descriptive word would be, but it was not good. Coming back from a camping trip about 2 weeks, maybe it was only 1 week before. And I smoked the last joint in the car. I had my last beer all the way coming down, and that was the longest trip I ever took. Driving down from L.A., we'd been backpacking back up there in the mountains. We almost didn't get out. It was the middle of winter, and it was just nasty, and it was a long, long trail and a really long car trip, and I just felt really, really bad, just covered with guilt and shame and nowhere to go. I went home. I couldn't go to work that next morning. I just felt just sick. And my wife, one more time, had to lie to the boss. I don't know what kind of story she told, but I slept the whole day. I felt bad. I still woke up with a really bad hangover. And another beer would cure hangover for sure. I knew that. But somehow I didn't drink. And then I think about 2 nights later, she said, she gave me the golden thumb, right? And it was golden because it turned on that light. Somehow it got me to my first meeting. And the old golden thumb saved my life, very, very literally. I had been, I got this big spike of some really bad suicidal ideas 5 years prior. I had this little pistol. I still have a little denial. This was a 357 Magnum. This is and I had ideas on how I was going to use that, you know, somehow, sometime. And even 5 years prior to my getting sober, I mean, I hadn't felt good for a long, long time. And I kept trying and trying and trying just to drink like a regular kind of guy. This seemed to work for everybody else that I saw drinking. They were having a good time. Some of them, now you might not believe this, some of them would actually have a couple beers and go home. I don't think I ever did that. I really don't think I ever did that. And I had no idea that I was built a little different than the normal guy, that I don't have any, whatever the medical people say, I don't have any neurochemical turn-off switch, and it just, my body just said more, you know? Just more. And I love the effect, in spite of how many times I threw up, you know? I was a puker in high school. And I was highly intelligent in high school. I knew that if I went upstairs, that the bed would spin a lot, right? So I would puke out on the neighbor's yard, out on the side of the house, you know. And there was a section out there about 8 feet long by about 3 feet wide that never grew any grass. It was brown. It was brown the whole summer, you know. And I knew they didn't have any idea that it was me, you know. So I was sitting there in that meeting looking at the tops of my shoes and heard everything I needed to hear. And then what happened was something else that was strange. I actually stayed after the meeting. And I went up to the table up in front and I tried to pick up the redhead, right, that's sitting up there. I knew she was going to fix me, you know. And she kind of laughed and she introduced me to a couple of guys. And Bob said that he'd been coming to AA for 7 years and he hadn't had a drink. And I knew he was a liar. I mean, nobody could ever possibly. And then Joe looked at me and he didn't say, it's probably a good thing he didn't tell me how long he'd been coming and been sober. And he said, you ever get in a fight? And I told my first AA lie. I said, yeah, sure. And he said, you ever get in a fight and get beat up? Oh, yeah. You ever get in a fight and get beat up so bad that you're just lying on the ground, you can't even get up to hit the guy? Yeah. He said, what happened? And I stood there with that dumb look on my face for I don't know how long. He must have been laughing. And I finally told him, I said, the guy finally stopped hitting me. And he got this big smile on his face and he said, yes, that's exactly what happened. And he said, you ever tried doing that with alcohol? And something in my head just kind of short-circuited, you know, because I had never even, not even once, you know, had I set down the boxing gloves and given up on trying to control alcohol. Not once. And he said, look, all you have to do is cease fighting. If you don't want to get beat up, just don't get in the ring. And I went home that night just kind of puzzling over all that he said there. And you know, because I must have heard something about powerlessness right there in that first meeting. But I sure wanted to go back and find out what they were all talking about, because they seemed to be having fun and they enjoyed themselves. They were laughing. They had friends and hadn't been like that for me for a long, long time, you know. I seemed to be in the quicksand, in the, I don't know how to describe the loneliness that I felt for the prior 5, maybe 7 years before I got here. Just a kind of an empty guy walking around with a combination between a real serious frown because I couldn't do it, couldn't drink like a regular guy, or a big happy face like, ain't it grand? It's certainly grand the wind stopped blowing. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem in the world. And I'm dying inside, you know? And so when he said, all you have to do, if you don't want to get hit, just don't get in the ring. You know, that really got my attention. And so I started going to meetings. I was going to meetings every night and weekends I kind of got the picture that they were not drinking and the whole project was about not drinking and I wasn't drinking, which was really kind of surprising. You know? I mean, this is grand. All I have to do is hang around with these guys About 2 years prior to that, we had been in some church group with about 12, 14 other families, and it was kind of like a family workshop, or I don't know exactly how to describe it. We had a certain little process, and I guess we did some writing, and when we started that family group thing down there at church, somehow or other, I wasn't drinking. I mean, there must have been enough spirituality to really touch me, you know. And I remember one of the leaders there asked me what the biggest thing was that has happened since I'd been going to that group, you know. And I said, well, I haven't had a drink since I've been coming here. And everybody in the room got really quiet, and they all turned around and looked at me, you know, like, wow. But that process got over, and they ended that little group, and I was drinking again real quick, real soon. And went on to the end of the world situation right there in that kitchen out there. So I was going to meetings and really enjoying it, and pretty much hating everything and everybody else. I was full of self-loathing and just kind of projecting it out onto the world, to everybody I could find. I hope you weren't one of the people that drove on the same freeway. Because all the cars on the freeway, I got yelled at least once going to work and once coming home, and I hated everybody else, you know. And one afternoon, I snuck up there in the club, and I snuck up to the front of the room, and I tried to read the steps, you know, so I could get all that stuff over with and get that out of the way. And another guy came in, and he came up and kind of looked over my shoulder and looked at the big board on the wall. And he said, he asked me this weird question. He said, you need some help with the steps? And I looked at him with a straight face, and I said, I don't think so. I don't think I'm that bad, right? And I still hadn't pulled up all the marijuana plants in my backyard. Okay? And so he kind of moved in a little closer, and so I couldn't get out of the corner, you know. You know how those old guys are. And he smiled, and he asked, talked again, a little bit, you know, a little bit of small talk, and then he asked me again, and I kind of got the idea that I wasn't going to get out of that corner until I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And that was really, really hard. I didn't know how to ask for help. It wasn't put into the hard drive, you know what I mean? The stuff I got in the hard drive, man, I was out the door as soon as I could and get away from that whole system. And get out there and play with the kids and run the mountains, and asking for help was not part of the book, you know. So there I was, stuck with this guy, and he said, he asked me this weird question, you know how it goes. He said, are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And I told my second AA lie. I said, yeah. I had no idea what this guy was talking about, or, I mean, hadn't stolen my first book yet or anything, you know? But I told this guy yes, you know, because I wanted what they had. Whatever that thing was there that was going on in the meetings, I wanted that. I wanted this big, giant, empty hole inside to get filled up with something, you know. And it was, I could ignore it when I was in the meetings. Somehow there was enough going on, there was enough of something in that room that would take that away momentarily. But as soon as I got out, got in the car and started driving home, there it was again. Almost darker than before. You know what I mean? So I told this guy yes, and he said, okay, meet me over at my house Sunday after the meeting. We're going to go and start on the book. We'll see what it says. And this guy led me through the book kind of page by page. And we didn't sit down and read it. We looked at it and talked about it a little bit. And he said, okay, we'll go home and read it once a night for a week, and we'll talk about it next week. And I did that, and I had no idea what this book was talking about. There was something in me that just did not want to understand what this book said. And I read it, and I would start on the first paragraph, and by the time I got to the second paragraph, I couldn't remember anything in the prior paragraph, you know? I mean, it was just kind of locked up. It had real alcoholism. It did not want anything in this book. And we read from the front through the end of the doctor's opinion, and then we started on the first chapter. By the time we finished the second chapter, it hadn't gotten any better, and I told my sponsor, and he kind of laughed. He said, look, and he laughed right out loud, right in my face. And he said, don't worry about it, just keep reading it. It's starting to go in. You're going to be okay. And I don't know what it was about the way he said that, but somehow I knew I was going to be okay. And I had no idea what all this stuff meant in the book, but it didn't seem to bother me as much that I couldn't. I mean, I could comprehend the words, certainly, but I couldn't put it all together. I couldn't remember too much. And he would laugh at me. He would just laugh at me. Just read the book. So we got to chapter 4, and he said, well, are you ready to go on? He would say that at every single stinking chapter we would get to, and I'd have to lie to him again, you know? So we got to chapter 4, and I was kind of getting a little assertive. I was feeling better, and I said, look, you know, I was brought up in the church, and I studied this, and I learned that. I even sang in the junior choir. And I don't think I really have to read chapter 4. And he got this funny look on his face, and he kind of took me by the elbow and walked me out the front door, and he said, well, maybe you don't have to read chapter 4. Maybe you don't have to read this book at all. He said, maybe you're not alcoholic at all. And he took out a dollar bill and stuffed it in my shirt pocket. He was dragging me across the street to the bar. He said, come on, I'm going to buy you your first drink. And I kind of got it right there about what kind of a disease I had and who was in control. You know what I mean? And alcohol had me right around the throat. And man, I had no idea really what kind of an illness I had. But I certainly went home and I read chapter 4. He would look at me and he would say, Pete, I don't know what's the matter with you. You know, we go and we come to a certain place in the book where we're supposed to do something, and you want to know what it's all about. You know, it's like you're trying to take the plane to Chicago, and we get the ticket and we walk out the thing, and all of a sudden you stop and you want to know about the plane and where it was made, and you want to know about the pilot and all of his family and where they grew the trees to make the rubber for the tires, and on and on and on. And I, All you have to do is just get on a stinking plane and go to Chicago, right? And I was still foggy enough that, you know, I would look at him and I would think, we're talking about alcohol here. What are you talking about planes for? And I wouldn't get it. And but little by little we got into, we actually kneeled down on the floor in front of his couch and he held my hand and we said the third step prayer. And he said, you know, sometimes there's a great effect felt at once. He said, you feel any different? I said, nope, not at all. Not at all. And he asked me the same question. You willing to go on? And so he read that sentence to me about where it says something like, although our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have just little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. He read that sentence three times just to make sure I got it, you know? And I kind of got it. And I was absolutely terrified. I'd never looked at myself before. I never wanted to look at myself. It was ugly. And I had so much guilt and shame that I couldn't even see it, you know? I had to go back to him four times and ask him what a resentment was. You know what I mean? I was so full of them. I carried around a truckload of resentments and it was my whole life and I didn't know, I couldn't even recognize them. I couldn't even put a label on it, you know? And he sat down and he wrote one out that he had against Carl. Well, I agreed with him there, that SOB. So I finally understood and I was able to go home and contemplate it a little bit more. Let's not rush into this four-step business, you know? So my dad had this brilliant idea. He thought we ought to rent a motor home and we ought to go and see my older sister in Colorado. And so there I was. I don't know how my soon-to-be ex-wife conned me into taking three kids all under eight. But there I was with the kids and my two drinking parents, and I was off driving this motor home. Yeah. Crazy, just crazy. And we finally got up there, and we spent a week in Denver, and then we went up in the mountains, and I was just coming apart. I was ready to drive over the mountains up to Rocky Mountain National Park to go to that little recovery home up there to go to a meeting, and they still had 4 feet of snow up there. My sister kind of looked at me. She said, "Hold on, I'll be right back," and she found a little meeting for me down in this little town of Granby. And those people saved my life, you know. And 2 days later, I was driven to run out there in the motorhome and start my inventory. And desperation is a gift, man, a gift. So I got home and he had been missing. My sponsor had been missing for a couple of weeks before we left, and he was still missing when I got back. And I got a call, I don't know what it was, 3 weeks later maybe. He was in the hospital. He had 11 knife holes in him, and he was going to be okay. And he said, "Okay, Pete, listen, when I get out of the hospital, I'll get back into El Cajon and we'll start working the steps again." And I really felt relieved. And I never saw him again. So I got another sponsor, and we started working. And by this time, I was overflowing with resentments. You know what I mean? I'd been sponsorless for 6 months of my second year, and I was starting to come apart. And I was still doing inventory and still going to a lot of meetings, but now I was carrying a lot of stuff. And we got working. We got to serious work, and that guy saved my life again, I think. So I read this part of the book that talks about the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. And I know it's not just a one-shot deal and we're done. I still had a half-decent amount of desperation and I still working pretty hard and I had let go of a lot of things. My first inventory with him was a long inventory. I had resentments. And I put him to sleep about three times when I was reading that inventory. He just kind of would doze off on the couch, you know. And all the while I'm reading, while I'm writing my inventory, I would talk about how much of a real pain in the neck it was and how much I couldn't believe that I had so many resentments and blah, blah, blah. And these old codgers would come up and they would say, "Hey, Pete, you know those two or three things that you're never going to tell anybody, that you're going to take to the grave with you?" They said, "Write them down." And I would look at them and say, "What? What big things? What are you talking about?" Right? And they would laugh and just turn around and walk away, you know. So somehow I got to that part in my life and I wrote those things down, but I'm never telling anybody. I'm not reading this stuff off the paper. And somehow when I got to that part of my inventory, reading all that stuff to him, I was halfway through before I knew what I was talking about. I was just reading the stuff off the paper. I wanted to get rid of it so bad. I wanted to be a free man. And we finished that up. He woke right up when I started talking about that stuff, see? And he said, okay, you got any more like that? And I said, no more. No more. He said, good, let's go to a meeting. And we went back over to that little club in El Cajon, and we sat there, and I was a free man. I was a free man. And we all went to get some pizza after the meeting. And I think it's still there, this little pizza place that's down the road, three, four, five blocks going east. Some little pizza place, and we walked in there, and must have been 15 of us or so, and they were banging pots and pans back there in the kitchen, and everybody was talking, and it was really loud, and it was so quiet inside my own head. Man, it was amazing. It was peaceful. It was just peaceful and quiet. And I had remembered something that happened, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months before that, where I had been in a meeting with a lot of newcomers, a lot of people that came in about the same time I did, and we were on step two or maybe step three, and they were all trying to figure out God. They were all kind of put some kind of label on them or get some kind of description of them, or it was God as we understood him, and we really didn't understand a whole hell of a lot, you know. But they were out there trying to find some label. And I remember walking up to the front of the room again and reading all those steps again. And, And I got down to the last one, and it said that there would be some kind of really big, deep down inside kind of change as a result of doing these things. And my sponsor and I, we would read, actually. I remember reading with him the spiritual experience in the back of the book, I don't know how many times, a lot. I kind of got it that I didn't need any kind of definition of, at all. And then since that time, I heard this really neat CD from this gal that had been drinking in Colorado. I don't know her name. She told a story about talking to her sponsor, and her sponsor said, look, don't worry about understanding God. If you have a power greater than yourself that you can understand, it's not big enough to solve your problems. So that kind of made it even okay, more okay, that I had no idea what this thing was, what this entity was, what this power was that was keeping all these guys, all these people sober all over the world, you know. And so it just made it okay to go ahead and just do the steps and just go ahead and do them again. And this thing about a spiritual experience of the educational variety has gotten louder. That sentence has gotten louder and louder for me. And I got conned into going to school, and man, I was scared to death. I was just terrified. I'm the dumbest kid on the block, and my ego is terrified to let anybody see that, you know? And I made it all the way through that course and started on another one, got all the way through that one. It was really amazing. And I was walking away from we did all our research up there at the UCSD library. Have you seen that? That's an amazing building. Just an amazing building. And I mean, you try to count all the books that they have just on the first floor, and that's just an amazing number. And they got, what, five, maybe six floors in that building? And I have read, I will have you know that I've read at least parts of maybe 15 books in that building. And I walked away from that library after the last little piece of research that I did, and I thought, man, I really do know only a little. You know what I mean? And somehow I swore up and down I'd never read another book, and I'm still on a quest, it seems, you know. And I like reading about spiritual things, and I like reading about exploration, you know. I kind of get a big kick out of the old Star Trek series, remember, where it said space, the last frontier, right? And the last frontier is really in here, man. It's really in here. And so I'm real glad I'm sober. Being sober is such a gift. I don't know how, as best as I can do it, it was, from what little I know, it was generated by a whole lot of pain, some severe hopelessness, and desperation, and somehow finding out that I could come here and that there was a solution here. Man, I'm really grateful you guys are here, and thanks, Larry, for asking me to speak. It's really been a pleasure.